So welcome everyone. Why don't we get started? So this is a meeting of the BART Police Department Review Subcommittee. So this subcommittee is composed of some BART directors, some representatives of BART Police, representatives of the community, and BART staff and consultants. We've been tasked with developing a model for civilian review of policing here at the BART District with the goal of improving accountability, transparency, and improving policing generally. So we developed this model. There are copies here. I think copies for members of the public are coming. This was presented at two public meetings in different forms. Yes. Oh, you all have copies of the model. Wonderful. Our last public meeting was 2 weeks ago, and at that meeting we asked members of the public, opened up a formal comment period, which ended on Friday, asked members of the public if they wished to submit comments in writing. We received a number of comments in person at that meeting. We've received also a number of comments in writing. The written comments are on their way here, so we'll have copies of those for you as well if you want to review them. So I think our goal today, as I understand it, is, and that meeting was a meeting of the full BART Board of Directors, so it was informational, not an action item, but I think all nine of us elected directors really wanted to hear, both see the presentation of the model, and then also hear the public's comments and reaction to that. So that was done. Our goal here is to make any revisions, clarifications, make any changes that we want to make to this draft model before it's introduced to the BART Board of Directors for adoption. As was pointed out at that meeting, and we pointed out at previous meetings as well, the model here does require some changes to the BART Act. The BART Act is the state law. Which governs BART, and we can discuss those in greater detail if folks want to. But basically, there's two changes needed. What we've been trying to do is create a model that conforms as best as we can to all the existing state laws governing policing, treating those as givens. But we are contemplating changes to the BART Act, so those are the lines that we're not coloring within. But all other aspects of state law, we've aimed to be consistent. So we are expecting a few more members, but I just wanted to open it up to any kind of comments, people's reactions to either things they heard at the meeting that they would like to discuss integrating into this model, or things that they've heard in the written comments or just things they're thinking about. So
I'll start.
Yeah.
Chapter 2.3, citizen board member qualifications. Mm-hmm. I know that you guys.
I'm sorry, Jesse, before we start, could we just go maybe just do introductions?
Okay. Jesse Sacons, BART PUA Association President. I should know
that. Greg Savage, President of the BART Police Managers Association.
Tom Rabulovich, I'm a BART director and I represent District 9 in San Francisco.
Lynette Sweet, BART Director, District 7.
Dorothy Ducker, the General Manager of BART.
Carol Wood Allen, the head of the Oversight Committee, but also a director in District 4, which was Oscar Grant's district.
Reggie Lyles, consultant.
Great. I'm sorry. Jesse?
Fosters. Chapter 2-03, Citizen Board Member Qualifications. Something added, but the comments I received.
Could you go over that again? What was it?
Chapter 2, that's page 9 on this.
Okay.
Citizen Board Member Call.
Chapter 2.03. Okay.
If it could be noted, the comments I've received that the people on the board cannot serve on another citizen review board for another police department.
Okay.
Change.
Yeah,
it's
I think it's a great idea. Anyone else? Yeah, okay. Great, so let's...
Since we're on that section,
okay.
If I could just point out, there were, in the draft in front of you, it's redlined, and most of the red lines are fixing typos or where the word auditor was dropped.
Mm-hmm.
But there are, I think, two substantive changes that we put in just for ease of discussion, not to be presumptive.
Okay.
But one of the comments made at the public meeting, and I think in some of the written comments, was to clarify that no person serving on the board should be a sworn police officer. We had noted that they wouldn't be a member of either association, but I thought that was the intent of what we were saying.
This clarifies it.
Okay.
Everybody's comfortable with that.
So that's also a change in 203. Okay. Consensus on that change as well? Is that unreasonable?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Dorothy, was there another?
Thanks. Yes, the other one on page 5, on duty officer involved shooting incidents, the red line addition, again, I believe was a comment specifically made by Barbara Tard, a civilian oversight professional. In San Jose and in Berkeley, if memory serves me. We had previously, the model had indicated that the auditor would be immediately notified by the officer in charge in an officer-involved shooting, but did not spell out what the auditor's responsibilities would be. And this clarifies that the auditor would have the authority to monitor all aspects of the ensuing investigation while it is in progress, to be present during interviews of employees, witnesses, complainants, and to submit questions to be asked by the interviewer in accordance with state and federal law.
Okay.
I think this is a practice, as I, if memory serves me correctly, that Don Kazmir had also discussed when we were originally discussing this scope for the auditor, and so we added this comment for the committee's consideration and discussion today.
Yeah, I believe that was actually one thing that we really were drawn to in that Sacramento model, was that the investigator's there at the scene early on and is watching in real time. So any comments on that clarification?
The only comment I have is the present, if we can clear it, could be whether close watching it on closed circuit television or...
Yeah, I think the Sacramento model, the person stands in another room looking at the glass partition.
Yeah, but I don't, but see, there are other technologies that they come out. You don't want to define that.
Well, it could, because the DA. Be in the room. Yeah.
How could you word it so that it would?
I think the best thing to do is just leave it blank and let them work that scenario out. Because in any investigation, homicide, whether they all have different dynamics, maybe you would want the person in the room. Maybe that's the only place the person can stand. And what if you're interviewing someone and you don't have the ability to have a closed circuit or something?
So does saying the auditor may observe?
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
And observation is being in the room, but you just don't say nothing.
Right.
You cannot say anything.
Well, it could be in the room and it could be in another room. It could be watching on one-way mirror or closed circuit TV. So I think if we...
Just the observer.
So the auditor may observe interviews of employees, citizen complainants, etc. Okay.
Well, it's better than the word present.
Okay. Yeah, be present implies a physical presence. I think observe is a little more vague, but we can determine what's appropriate.
I guess what I'm saying is that the appropriateness of it ought to be decided at the interview from the people who are in charge of that.
Or as a matter of policy. I mean, it might be you... I think as this process rolls forward, hopefully we develop kind of a protocol for what happens in incidents like that. That would be a matter of policy that we can flesh out. I don't know that we need to do it today. Okay. But for the time being, we'll say the auditor may observe interviews of employees, citizens, complainants, and witnesses. Okay. Right. So those were the two substantive changes. As you see, there's a series of additional red line changes. We can go through them if anybody wants to, but mostly it was just clarifications, capitalizations, a few typos. Remarkably few. Thank you, Marcia. Okay.
That's all my I noticed in yours, do you have a flow chart in yours?
Yeah.
It's not in mine.
It's on the back.
Okay.
Is there a copy in front of your place, Greg?
It's on this one.
Ha! Got it. Okay.
Oh, okay. I see.
All right.
Got it.
So why don't I ask members of the public if they have any comments on the change? I'm sorry.
I have two other questions that I wanted to raise. Unless you want to take public comment first, I'm sorry.
And I have one too.
Okay. I thought I would just take comments on the changes we've discussed so far. Any members of the public want to speak about the three changes that we've discussed?
I just had a question. What's the motivation for restricting board members from serving on other boards?
Other review boards?
Right. Yeah, I just, you know, I'm not objecting. I just don't understand what the motivation is for declaring that.
No motivation at all. There you go.
I think it's a better way to conduct business. I think somebody's on Berkeley's board, they should be on Berkeley's. They shouldn't be on multiple police review boards. There's just no other reason than that.
Do you think that maybe that limits experience that people might have gotten elsewhere?
Creates more. Now you're going to have a bigger pool of people to draw from for other places.
Well, I guess the goal, as we've discussed it, would be you could have served on another board, but we're asking people just to currently serve on only one board at a time. So hopefully we'll get experienced people who've been commissioners in other places, and those would be people we'd want to recruit. It's a good question. You know, is there somebody who would be white hot who'd be willing to serve on two of these boards? The other question, of course, is a time commitment. And I guess one idea is you let people manage their own time, but I think considering that this is a considerable time commitment on, in essence, a volunteer basis, there might be some reimbursement. I'm inclined to say, one board at a time, just to make sure that they can fully commit to what we were asking them to do here.
Most city commissions also limit you to being on one commission or board at a time within their framework. So, and I think it's the same mindset. It's just that you don't overload somebody with volunteering. And it's an up or a down. It doesn't matter, but if you make everyone happy to have it that way.
So are you saying one board at a time or one civilian review board at a time?
One civilian review board at a time. If they're on their local planning commission, I don't think we're really from doing this. We're really talking about a civilian board. Welcome. We just discussed three changes that folks had made. Actually, two are in, and there's a copy right under your a red line draft, and it's got some proposed changes. Citizen oversight model. Just discussed three. Jesse had proposed a change that said board members. So on page 9.
Yeah, I'll just write down.
Okay.
Page 9.
So that board members couldn't serve on another police review committee. That's not in the draft. And then we had also discussed the two changes that were made. One, also to that section, that no person who's currently a sworn police officer should serve on the civilian review board. And then the third was in section F on page 5, just a kind of expanding in terms of what the auditor is able to do when responding to a police-involved shooting, just that they can be present, well, not present, but they can observe interviews, submit questions to be asked of interviewees, etc.
Thank you.
So those were the three we discussed, and we were going to public comment on those. So if you have any, I don't want to put you on the hot seat, but if you have any comments or questions on those three, let me know. Otherwise, I think we're going to sort of put those to bed and then go to the next changes.
I don't have any initial reaction.
Okay, great. Yeah, if you want to comment later when you have a chance to review, you're welcome to. So, all right. So with that, Director Sweet.
And I know we're trying to put the final touches on getting this thing out. One of the comments that seemed to repeatedly come up that night was, also something that I think we got in here as well, and it's a timeline piece. Noble did a really extensive job of going through here and kind of framing some timelines for us, and that...
Noble?
Yeah, Noble. Well, we were just asking for some help on clarifying things, and Noble was one of the groups, along with everyone else, who got an opportunity to read the draft model that we had, and it was a glaring piece for them, as well as folks at night. We didn't have timelines, like if you submit a complaint, how many days from that date do you get something back? So what Noble ended up doing, and...
So Noble made comment, and we didn't get it?
I'm not saying they made comment and you didn't get it. I'm saying I'm reading it. I don't know what you got.
Can I just make copies?
Yeah.
Unless everybody has it.
Okay.
Sure. But it was talking about calendar days versus business days. It's not a deal breaker. It's just trying to come up with some timeline.
I'm just concerned that there's comments out there changing the draft, and somehow we're being excluded.
Well, we just got comments that Marcia brought us down this morning, too, Jesse. Again, nobody's trying to exclude anyone. It's trying to make this a good document. I don't want to be confrontational this morning, so let's...
Jesse,
this is all goodwill day.
We're making copies right now, and apologies for the oversight if that did not get distributed to the full committee as part of the public comments. We're making copies now and be available to you and to... members of the public.
And I guess I should keep on. We also had Councilwoman Desley Brooks, who went through this draft as well and made some comments along the exact same lines, and it was just timelines, trying to come up with how many days from start to finish throughout this process. We hadn't identified any of that, and before we put this in the bed, that's what I'd like to see us do, is at least figure out if we use business days, calendar days, the whole nine yards, so that there's never any confusion going forward what we're looking at.
Well, the court recognizes business days. We recognize weekends.
Well,
so when they say an annual, when they count the days that you have time to respond the legal way,
mm-hmm.
it's Monday through Friday.
I'm a banker, and when we counted days that you collected interest, it was 7 days a week. Well, no, but here's where I'm going with this. We're not giving these fantastic timelines. I mean, if you look at what Noble and Desmond and everyone else did, we were looking at 10 calendar days as something easy for people to understand. So, in essence, it's a week. I mean, when you really...
If we go to page 8, chapter 1-11, timeliness, again, I'm working from memory, not from notes, but we had started this discussion on timelines with the first parameter, help me out, Jesse and Greg, or the chief, when I've got this wrong, Reggie, that the current law requires that discipline be completed within a year, I believe, is why we have the 365 days a year. And we had some interim, at least one interim deadline in this, as if in an earlier draft, where if the process wasn't completed, then it would be, you know, I think, as I recall, returned to the chief so that we did not miss the 365-day window.
Mm-hmm.
And this language reflects the decision that this committee, I think, came to at the time, which was to charge the auditor and the citizen board with developing a timeline so that we could ensure completion of the disciplinary process within the 1 year. And that's what I think, that's how I read the comment. I don't know that I've seen Councilwoman Brooks' comments, but the Noble comment as trying to set, you know, time frames for things to move along. And so I guess the question for this committee is, do we want to try to design that timeline, or do we want to leave it with a charge to the auditor and the citizen board to define a timeline, as I think they're charged here, to ensure that the work gets done within the statutory one-year time frame and we don't risk losing a process because it takes longer than it should.
For me, having it defined time later is okay, as long as we understand fully that this whole section is incomplete, that we don't have any of those dates established yet, but it's all in trying to make sure we are complying with the 365 days.
Can I make maybe a suggestion on that? It may have been my work. Since whatever this committee, this group is doing is going to be spilling over to the next committee that's formed out of this, what about rather than drawing up strict timelines right now, express the sense of urgency by saying that the 30 days, 60 days, and 90 days from an incident, there'll be reportage. And then the committee could figure out what within that 30 days, 60 days, 90 days would make sense in terms of a regular type of investigative report. But at least that would carry the sense to the next group that would perhaps work on this, that the timely and regular reports on an incident would be expected, so that it just doesn't hang out there a bit.
I wanted to make a comment.
Yeah.
That the intent, the 365 days comes out of the California legislation. It's a legal term to make sure that these things are done in a timely manner. So that 365 days is a legal term for police officers, internal affairs investigation. So you have to use the legal counting of days, mm-hmm. and that is excluding weekends. Okay, then the next point is that we want to make sure, and I think I'm agreeing with Director Sweet, that what we want to avoid is that good justice does not come about because cases were delayed, mm-hmm. and then the 365 days element kicked in. And this was a factor mm-hmm. in the San Francisco OCC. And they have to work themselves around it, and they've found a resolution to that problem now. But that's what we're trying to avoid here. And so as long as everybody understands that, and then the new committee that comes out of it, they understand it. I would suggest, and I didn't comment then because I knew it was the responsibility of the new committee, that there ought to be a opportunity for the investigator to say, this is why we need to stop the counting of the days.
Yeah.
Some key witnesses in Europe won't be back for, because he's in jail in Europe, won't be back extradited for 30 days. So I need some time. And those things ought to be factored in, because the key is not 365 days, gotcha, is to make sure that we have swift justice.
Right. And yeah, it's a great summation. I mean, I think when we discussed this previously, there's a push and a pull, and on the one hand, we definitely want to have a timely process, right? Complainants, police officers, they want this investigation done, thoroughly. They want it done quickly, and they want to know, they don't want to be left hanging or in limbo. But thoroughness is another thing, and I think if you put an artificial timeline in, we don't want complaints simply dismissed or dropped because they ran up against a timeline that's too tight, or, as you said, investigation compromised because of the availability of witnesses or time. Also, the incidents are going to be very different, right? They think about New Year's Eve, where you had actually a lot of officers involved, we had a lot of complainants. That's going to be necessarily a more complex investigation than maybe something that was just one complainant, one officer involved. So I think the 365 days, the other thing we need to build in here is the fact that there's a lot of different parties that kind of are involved in the review process and the appeal process. So, for your 365 days, you need to count back and make sure that if there is an appeal, that you can get all the way through that process without running out the end of the timeline. So I'm inclined to sort of go with what we've done here, which is say, maybe we don't have enough information right now to say, everything should be done in this time. We're going to hire a professional auditor. We're going to appoint a commission. and let them come up with a set of timelines that are reasonable and that they can adhere to. The other thing that we talked about was reporting, that there will be regular reporting, at least every month, of the status of every investigation. So somebody will know, complaint was filed on date X, it's been, what, 2 months, 3 months, whatever, the report's not there. So there'll be a way that both the committee and the auditor, anybody else interested, can track these in real time, just to make sure that no investigations are kind of lagging. You know, if you read 6 months or 9 months, there's no report, then that's certainly something that would be red flag, because they're running out of clock.
Yeah.
Is there
any way that we can take this Section 1-11 and strengthen it some way to ensure that that next committee understands this? I mean, I know it says that they're going to do this, but I don't know. There just needs to be something here.
You don't want to slip the cracks.
Well, yeah.
I suggest that you do an executive summary and then maybe include that, you know, things like that in that's right in the front of the document. And then that keeps them on.
Yeah. I was thinking also we ought to pull out those areas in this where we've said this board, you know, should, you know, their to-do list doesn't work. Like, we've said that the auditor or the civilian review committee, once they get up and running, needs to do this and this and this. I think if we sort of make a bulleted list of here's your to-do list as soon as you're appointed, that would be helpful too, just as a reference, because we have in a few instances said that, where we're not going to settle it, but we're asking them to adopt a policy, to adopt a set of practices. So maybe we could pull those out separately, so just that's really visible. And then that could be part of the executive summary, too, in terms of follow-up steps. You know, as soon as the board's appointed and the auditor is hired, the following things need to happen. And could be part of our monitoring as well. That'll help us as board members evaluating this, hopefully, a year and change from now, understanding what we'd ask them to do at the outset and whether they've done it or not. So any more discussion on timeliness? Does anyone feel like we need to make changes to what's there beyond what we've discussed in terms of...
So what are you going to do about the Noble recommendation then? You're not going to take it into account?
What I would do is say, you know, auditor, civilian review board, here's the Noble recommendations. And so when they're setting their timeline, what they do will be informed by what Noble said.
No, another question. Has a Noble scope of work to develop a part of their scope of work when they support citizen review, correct? I believe it was.
I don't have the scope with me, but they were to comment, at least Jesse and I can double check. But we had, I think because of the timelines that we were looking at, we were cognizant of with the legislature and the time frame for the Noble study, which is not due until early September. We had asked them to pull out, separate from that, at least a review of what we are doing. I think Tom's recommendation of giving the, and maybe calling that out in this to-do list summary that you've described, the Noble recommendations on that timeline to inform, I think the auditor and the citizen board and the department are going to have to work together to develop a timeline that is going to be achievable and meet the standards of statutory law.
Yeah. You know, the main purpose of the Noble contract, as I understand it, was really to review and comment existing or current procedure. So they have commented here on the review, police review.
But very interesting comments, by the way.
Some of these comments actually can be incorporated into current practice, I think. Because there will still be an internal affairs department in the district. So some of these will inform, I think, what the citizen committee do, and some of them can inform current practice.
Well, part of the what we have, you've given Noble a lot of responsibility to come with recommendations. You actually also gave the board and the auditor the power to report on the progress, right, in there on implementing those recommendations. Mm-hmm. So you gave Noble that much, you know, clout and
ignoring. I mean, we could, Jesse, if people are so inclined, we can say, all right, well, let's hash this out. Let's establish these timelines right now, or we can do, as we've said, which is just let's have the auditor use the Noble recommendations when they're doing it.
Can we put it on the...
to-do list?
No. Let's put it on the record what Noble recommends. I like to talk about it.
Okay.
I'm kind of confused. Mr. Seitan, are you not liking these recommendations and you...
No, I actually like them. I'll put it on the record. Let's put it on the record right here in front of everybody.
Do you have time to read them?
Let's start on number one. The process of establishing an independent citizen oversight system for the BART Police Department should be developed at a pace sufficient for proper planning and should not be established solely because of urgent and local demands of the community. The committee may not like the end results because the system may be flawed as a result of establishing the policies, procedures, and systems too rapidly, which I'm pretty in agreement with that. The system must also be properly subsidized and carefully thought out and planned. Then if you go down to number three, it's totally... They basically are telling you guys the BART Board of Directors should not appoint the Citizen Board. The Citizen Board should be free of politics and even the perception that they are influenced by politicians. That's kind of interesting. And if you keep on going through here, it says right here, too, page 8 on their recommendations, the following sections are inappropriate. The independent police auditor should not associate with the Citizen Board in this manner. This does not give the appearance of independence and could be perceived as collusion.
Well, can I comment?
Can I just say one quick thing? When they say
the board
of directors should not be involved in the politics, I don't want everybody to think everyone is involved. You know, that's like painting the board with the same brush that you're painting, that sometimes is painted with all police officers. You know, all police officers are bad or thugs or whatever. Well, I don't think everybody that's necessarily a politician, although it often seems that way, is totally political in the sense that people think. So I just want to say that statement alone bothers me. Yeah. You know?
Page 14 says right here, delete section and add.
I wasn't done.
I understand, but I was actually in the middle of something when I asked you that question.
Yeah.
It's because what I'm hearing people saying is that the part of the Noble recommendation that refers to timeliness is something that we should lift up. But frankly, if we incorporate this whole Noble document, two things. Number one, it re-argues everything we've been talking about over the last 7 months. Number two, Noble, and that's been 1 minute in these proceedings. They didn't spend 2 minutes talking to the community members or any of you. So their recommendations, though they are noble indeed, I don't think that they're relevant because they didn't even show up at these meetings. So how could their recommendations be given that much validity to now alter what we've been doing over the last 6 or 7 months? So then if there's something in their recommendations regarding timeliness that is relevant, I think that we should lift that, extract that, and embrace it. But in terms of the entire document, I think that it's problematic because they did not do due diligence by even showing up at these meetings.
I wanted to comment also, because I read the document, and they were assigned the responsibility of assessing existing police departments. I don't even know if this is totally Noble's position. Mm-hmm. This may be Patrick Oliver's position. I had a long, detailed discussion with him on citizen oversight, and he'll go on record any day of the week against it. Mm-hmm. But you got to put that in context.
Yeah.
He's from Ohio. Citizen review doesn't exist there. It exists here in California.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Let me finish. I didn't interrupt. Some others may have, but I did.
Okay.
Citizen review doesn't exist there like it exists here in California. Again, it's new to BART, citizen review oversight. But it's not new to California. It's not new to California law enforcement. In most large cities, that have had egregious acts, like the Oscar Grant scenario, have established citizen oversight, and they're over 30 years old. So an individual who comes from Midwest, who does not have citizen oversight, and they handle their situation a different way. And those most of those old Midwest cities, they have police commissions who are citizens. So they don't establish citizen oversight boards. The New York Police Commission is made up of citizens. The Newark Police Commission is made up of citizens. So this is contradictory to their way of doing things. As you know, as an experienced police officer, the way the police east of the Mississippi, not all of the way we police west of the Mississippi. This is developed, citizen oversight is developed from the fact that our cities generally didn't have strong mayors. Generally our cities had city managers. And when we had an egregious act, it spawned the riots in Los Angeles, spawned citizen oversight. The riots in Berkeley spawned citizen oversight. The incidents in Oakland spawn citizen oversight. In a small 50,000 person city in Novato, egregious act happened there, spawned citizen oversight. So again, this is his opinion. I don't know if this is Noble's opinion, because I'm a member of Noble, and I would have said to him, I disagree with this.
But so, who wrote this then?
Yeah, I don't know who wrote it.
And who at part asked him to review it?
It was in the scope of work.
Now it's in the scope of work, all of a sudden now. Okay.
It was, you know, what I believe I said before, and I'll try to say it again more clearly now, is that it was in the scope of work that they would review any citizen oversight proposal. We did not ask them to, and to Reverend Buford's point, why they did not participate in this process, because we did not ask them to develop a citizen oversight model. So that wasn't what we had engaged them to do. And so I want to be clear that it's no, in my view, no failure on their part that they didn't engage with us. That wasn't part of what we asked. We asked them to do other things. But we did ask them to review and comment on the work that was being developed through this process, and that is what these comments represent.
Again, they're coming out of a context that's different than the history here at BART and in this Bay Area. Again, we have 10 counties, if you count Sacramento as a part of the 9 various counties. Of those 10 counties, 6 of them have citizen oversight. But again, if you don't need it, if you have a community where it's not needed, then it's not a problem. But if you have a community or a municipality or an entity where it's needed, it has been established. And again, it's over 30 years old. So I think we don't have to be regressive by lifting this up as if it's something that is telling us something. They don't know what we know about citizen oversight. We have 30 years of experience on it, where it's working, not only in Northern California, but in Southern California.
Kirby, can I ask a question? I'm confused.
Yeah.
Who should I interpret then who made these comments? One person, that's what I heard Reggie just say, and
so
I don't think that's correct.
Too.
Was it made by Noble, so that's a group of 3, 5, the whole committee? Or do we really know?
Perhaps I could clarify. And I apologize for not having these copied in
that's
here. Noble sent these very late, too late for the public meeting that we had, so it's my error. But I think from an email I got from Patrick over the weekend, Dave Scott, and I don't know exactly who Dave Scott is, took the lead on making these comments.
I believe David Scott, I'm sorry, I don't have the resumes here.
He's in Philadelphia.
He's in at SEPTA, Transit System in Philadelphia. But, the Noble, the work that is being conducted for BART by Noble is being conducted by a team of consultants. I think all, most of them are members of Noble, but they are, as with each of the entities that proposed in response to our request for proposals to do this review, they had assembled a multi-person team of professionals, experts, to conduct the review. Noble's methodology is assigning, I think, different individual members facets of the review. And so there are leads with not every member of their team is looking and engaged in every aspect of their review. Different individuals take the lead based on their area of expertise. But then the product is the product of Noble working in a consultancy to the district.
My only concern is if based on what I had just asked Reggie, and I think Dorothy and Director Sweet were also so involved on the committee selection. I was just concerned with police oversight. Was that part of their? That wasn't part of their area.
They, in their proposal, they had proposed to review or offer comment on civilian oversight.
Okay.
It was not to, they were not engaged to design a civilian oversight.
Well, my concern is the time in which they offered their comment, because somewhere early on, I forgot who I talked to, I was maybe one of them or staff or something, but my concern with them offering their comment was, if in fact they could attend meetings of which they could not, then I have trouble then, because there's been so many dynamics that have occurred. And I mean, if they would, in my opinion, be at some of the meetings we were, I think that they would think differently than what their comments are saying. These just look strictly out of the book. These look like, you know, in fact, he's got some book section, something, page two. And to me, it comes off, I have to say this, kind of like my dissertation course, you know, where you cite works of literature, a literature review on your comments as opposed to your life experiences. Mm-hmm. And I think it's got to be more in a practicum format where it's your real life experiences along with your reading. And it can't be, you know, isolated or bifurcated into two sections. And that's what I see happening here a little bit. And that, so my only comment, and I ask, and I'm throwing this out, did anybody here, and I'm directing this, I guess, to the police, that did you talk to them and encourage them to write this? You don't have to answer that.
No.
I'm
just asking because
this came.
I hear you. I'm one of those that I'm a conspiracy.
That's a good question.
Let me just say this. When something comes late and when something comes, you know, like somebody's asking, well, why aren't we looking at this and like that? I just asked a question because that's how my mind operates. Yours may not operate that way. That's all I'm.
Let me, Director Ward Allen, try to assuage your concern, because this we had, I think, been trying. We've had a couple of discussions along the way of trying to manage parallel processes that we had underway.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the original notion was that they would do a survey of civilian, that Noble would do a survey of civilian oversight models.
Mm-hmm.
This committee was well beyond, I mean, we had already done that work. And so perhaps wrongly, but given that they were in their proposal to comment on civilian oversight, having their perspective on the work on the commenting on the model, like we took other public comment on the model, was the course that we pursued. It was not at the behest of the police department, and it may have been the wrong way to try to focus their work into something that potentially would be of relevance for the committee's consideration.
Barry Bonds' ball can go into the Hall of Fame with an asterisk. This should go into our proceedings with an asterisk, because the way that it was introduced is questionable. The thought process that produced it is questionable, and the goal of it to me is questionable. And so that since we are passing things on to another committee, if this gets passed on, it ought to be passed on with some assets.
I could agree with you more, and I have to just be just perfectly honest, and I want to remind folks, I do have this white beard now, but I was a policeman, and I was a manager in police department, and I worked both sides of this Bay Area, in urban and suburban communities. I want to go on record by saying, if you had a way of polling all of law enforcement about citizen review, it would fail overwhelmingly. Most policemen think that they can do the status quo. Most chiefs want to handle these kind of issues that spawn citizen oversight. They want to be able to handle it within their authority. However, in some situations, in some cases, in some municipalities, doesn't work. And when it doesn't work, citizen oversight has been a legitimate and reasonable response. It's over 3 decades old, and it's worked fine. It's worked fine. The difference between a citizen oversight board and a police commission comprised of civilians, not that much different. Just a different name and a different route of development. In our communities in California, they've been spawned out of egregious acts, riots. Somebody wanted to keep the status quo and didn't recognize the change in the community. Now, I'm not advocating rioting, but I will say if you did any police history, you'll know that because of Daryl Gates' insistence of not responding to community policing, these things happened. Right after that, you got a police oversight board. And things in Los Angeles got better. And it has mushroomed in certain communities in California. Now, if we spend all this time, about 7 months, going on 8 months now, and we're fighting for the status quo, we've missed the mission. We've been established to say the status quo didn't work. And it had not worked for some time. We had some little minor fixes, then a little minor fix, but we had a terrible breakdown on January 1, 2009. So this is our response. I want to support Noble having his right to comment, but the East Coast cops that come out of a different environment, different citizen interaction environment than we have. I mean, we have a citizens commission in two places, Los Angeles and San Francisco. That's it. Police commissions all of them down the seaboard. So I think Mr. Scott, who's a Chiancet chief,
except I think he is the deputy.
Deputy of the transit authority?
That's correct.
He I don't know that he has the experience to even comment or write about this. He ought to write about police commission, but he can't write about citizen oversight. What does he know?
I sort of want to refocus this in terms of these are Noble's recommendations, right? The consultants gave
them. They ought to be changed from Noble's recommendation.
Well, for better or for worse, it's not, I mean, this is, you know, they didn't go on the mountain and bring this down, right? These are human beings who made these recommendations. And you know, I read them and I look at them and I say, all right, well, you know, there's some ideas here about a philosophy of government, right? Just how, you know, people are perceiving the role of the public, people are perceiving the role of people's elected representatives, a citizen commission, and appointed officials. And so, yeah, I'm sort of looking at recommendation number three. And, you know, let me put this in context, too. Sort of sat here as a director since the first of the year and heard a lot of public comment from many members of the public, very concerned about the Oscar Grant incident and about policing at BART. And so there's this notion of, well, you know, contained in these recommendations, we don't want to politicize things. You know, you don't want the BART board of directors involved. And I just have to say, as a director, you know, I've heard the opposite. At the public meetings, I've heard people saying, no, we elect you, you are accountable. We want you to take this police department and make sure it's the best police department. They need to be accountable to you and by extension to the people. So, but, you know, I know this too from dealing with bureaucrats my whole life. It's like there's often an attitude that it's, you know, from senior managers that the elected officials are the problem, that they're the workarounds, right? So there's always that tension in any organization. And so I see that there's that question is, do we want the people's elected representatives, the BART board, to have a role in this? Also the role of the commission. I think Jesse tagged it later on in terms of the inspector working with the commission. And as you said, we have a tradition in the Bay Area, both of these kind of empowered boards, and also this model of inspector working closely with an appointed commission. So that's the commission model, and it exists in lots of places. It's not necessarily wrong. There's the independent auditor model as well. And I think in our discussions here, we've always said that the subject of hybrid has come up, that we want sort of a hybrid of the two. And I think the recommendations of Noble are sort of saying this doesn't fit neatly in either box, right? So you should be in this box or that box. I think we as a committee have, through our discussions, have said, well, you know, we're actually going to try a little bit more of a hybrid model, you know, not the the agency model like we have in San Francisco exactly, but not the auditor model with no accountability to either appointed board or an elected board. So, you know, I guess looking at these recommendations, just from the big picture, does this change anything? And, you know, going to the other point, which was Noble sort of wasn't sitting in these meetings. And I think, and members of the public are here, and I'd love to hear your opinions, but, you know, I think what I've heard consistently is people have said they want a more empowered citizen board, they want a more empowered BART board with regard to policing, not less. And if I got that wrong, I want to know, but it's sort of, I read this and think, well, this is not what I'm hearing from the public in terms of what they're asking us to do. In terms of where these go, I think, yeah, there's going to be a whole public record. We have a lot of comments from members of the public, and then we'll submit the Noble comments as well. So when we take this up as a BART board, you know, everyone will get to see the Noble comments, everyone will get to see the public comments, and hopefully we can be as true to those comments as we can. But understanding that there's different ways of approaching government. There's a notion that elected officials are a problem. There's a notion that, and it's the notion that I adhere to, which is the notion that appointed officials need to be accountable to the people's elected representatives, that a bureaucracy that really has no accountability to either a citizen commission or to a elected representatives can be a problem too. Read a book before I came here called The Power Broker, which I recommend to all of you. It's the story of Robert Moses, a very, very powerful bureaucrat in New York State, ran the place for 30 years, and you know, really did, in many ways, tremendous damage to New York City. And there's dangers to having an overly politicized system. There's dangers to having a system where appointed officials and bureaucrats aren't accountable. And so I think we're trying to strike a balance by having lots of players, an appointed commission, a BART board, and a professional auditor. And it's a lot of gives and takes. We haven't said all power to one or the other. So those are my comments. I mean, I guess the question for folks is, does, you know, we've sort of talked about this hybrid model. We've talked about, you know, a role for the BART board and citizen commission. Does anything we're seeing here change anything?
I don't think any citizen board is a replica of another. They're all unique and distinctive. They have some similarities, et cetera, based on the culture and environment and the history of that entity, that policing entity. So BART's Citizen Review Board is unique, should stand on its own, and shouldn't be ashamed of it.
Yeah.
And should not, and no one should back away from the fact that what we're doing here is different from the other major cities in the state of California, San Jose, San Francisco, Los Angeles County, Berkeley, Oakland. These are the major cities in California, and they all have citizen boards. We're talking about governing over 3 million people, and they're 30 years old. Where are the lawsuits saying they've done something wrong? The track record ought to show that they're doing something correct. And if you read the newspaper, Los Angeles Times, like I do, and you watch what Bratton has done in Los Angeles, if you watch the success of the once most infamous police department in the state, maybe the country, Los Angeles PD, how it's been turned around, and everybody in the community of that Los Angeles is saying, just done wonders. Now, what is wrong with that? There's the success. There's an example. And then what did San Francisco do? They went and hired a guy from where? The LAPD.
To answer your question, Director George, I don't see anything that changes. I think the board very clearly established early in January, the direction to the committee that Director Ward Allen chairs with a full scope of work, but certainly citizen review was clearly in that jurisdiction. We have gone from there and the hard work of that committee to creating this expanded committee, have had the benefit of public input both as a member of this committee as well as, I think, extensive comments that we've heard. I certainly have heard nothing since we are, as the agenda indicated, and as we said at the public meeting on the 30th, I thought our mission today was to wrap up the final loose ends, to respond to the public commentary that we heard both that night and in the subsequent public comments that we've received, an email, and I would hope that we are in a position to accomplish that. The item is calendared for our board, for the BART board consideration at the board meeting this Thursday, and I hope that we can continue to move forward.
Clearly, Mr. Ward Allen.
That's right.
I didn't know that this thing even existed until Ms. Sweet brought it up. So this is the first time I saw it.
This is my first time looking
exactly.
At it.
Exactly. So just to clear that up.
Okay.
So we didn't know
okay.
about
so
this thing.
No, I just happened to ask the question. That's all. But one thing that I would like to say is I'm very much for all of the work that we're doing. At this point, you know, we're at 9 months, and I want to see a baby produced. I don't want to be short at this point in time, okay? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, to go this far and not have that child, I would go at 8. So I think that what the work that we've done, you know, has been remarkable because one thing that's very important that we understand about this committee, we are, it's 9 members representing different counties here, and you actually, and something that you probably notice but don't think about often, you have a urban-suburban board.
Yes.
And that's very significant. Most of us that are for this are from the urban centers because we deal with this every day. This past weekend, 2 weekends ago, when we finish this, I'm going to take it and recommend it to the Oakland Police Department. I think they need to take our oversight. It might help them out. They need some help. So my point is that we need to go forth with what we have here and move with it and try to get this going. But keep in mind, because you have that kind of suburban-urban board, you have to have a hybrid. Because Walnut Creek does not have to deal with the same kind of problems that Oakland does. San Francisco, Richmond, you know. And I just throw that out. Likewise, I think East Coast and West Coast, you know, not to get too urban on you, but you have the Bloods and the Crips. You have East Coast, West Coast. That's the hip-hop generation. All I'm talking about is you have a situation there where it's very, very different. And the differences might be somewhat minute, but they're big enough that they make that we have to come up with a policy. We cannot get away, in my opinion, especially with what we had that happened in Oakland, not coming up with a model to improve what we had in the past. So those are just some views I wanted to emphasize.
Just want to say we want oversight. We've been for it from the beginning. There's things in here that I don't like, and it's just kind of funny that Noble feels almost the same way as I do on some of these things. Well, that's all I wanted to point out. So that's
No offense, but that's like the education community. Yeah. You would probably, you know.
Yeah. So okay. We're here to get it done. Let's go.
Okay.
All
right.
Are we? Any further discussion on the Noble recommendation specifically? Just the. From the broad brush, or I mean, we sort of started a discussion on the timeliness. Are people comfortable with the notion that we will still ask the review board to do that?
I know you're on the Berkeley review. I don't know your last name.
Bill White.
How does Berkeley do it?
In terms of timelines.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a 365 year timeline, but. I think there is a 90-day completion of the investigation that is required. But Berkeley has what we call the agreement, which is tolling of some situation where the investigation has stopped because of a problem with someone not being available. There is a tolling of time, so there is agreement that will. Extend the 360-day or the 90-day, whatever timeline we're using at this specific time, process.
Does it work?
It works, yes. Yes.
I was taking one of Noble's admonitions, which is system may be flawed as a result of establishing the policies, procedures, and system too rapidly. I don't know that this process has been too rapid for anyone, but going back to the question of timeliness and specific timelines, we can kind of get into that if we want to. My thought is, let's get the professional auditor and the commission and put that on their to-do list. But if are you comfortable with that?
Part of it's going to be based on how often they meet and all that stuff.
Yeah, and we've given them a few tasks to do from the outset in terms of setting up policies and procedures. But we've also said we want them to be a forward-looking board. We want them to be a policy-oriented board and not just be focused on incidents. So, all right. So any comments in terms of where we're at so far? Yes?
I'm kind of interpretation about that is with Dr. Aaliyah Lewis, because we have been due diligent in our search within the city of Oakland and the volatility of the position we're in and the Egregious Act. What they have succinctly done is in page 11,
Nicole,
on page 11, it's like the tail wagging the dog. It says, if the board of directors or politicians are associated with politicians, appointment of the citizen board members by politicians may appear impaired. Citizen board members can be interviewed and hired by Nicole.
I'm sorry, are you?
She has Nicole Code of Ethics.
You're looking at the Noble recommendation?
Yeah.
Okay.
The California Human Rights Commission. This is chapter 202, appointment of citizen board members, which we are that are here that are not on the board. It goes to say citizen board members can be interviewed and hired by Nicole, the Human Rights Commission, or another independent organization that they recommend. Minimum qualifications for the independent police auditor citizen board members and investigators should be established. The BART board of directors should select from an approved list by Nicole. I find that shocking and appalling. Very shocking and very appalling. And let me reiterate, it's because they don't know us as citizens. And if this becomes a part of, as you recommended, Mr. Sekon?
I'm not recommending anything. I was just kind of curious of what they say.
Okay, the adamancy of putting it in the record. Let's keep this as part of the 7-day comment period, and it should be reviewed and acted upon as that. But if we were to adopt it into where we're going now, this would be adhered to. In one false move and one wrong word, this will have to be established for all board members. And they will be totally out. You'll be in wherever that Nicole is. So we become a part of the part. And that's not what we want. What we want is a citizen review committee that is appointed by our elected official, not Nicole.
I actually didn't even see that part.
Oh, okay, well, as a citizen that's been holding the lid on the city of Oakland while we go through this process, we should look at everything before we insert. We have to digest. So the next commission should really look at all comments. And I would wish you would take this as a comment period and not as acted upon or implemented. Thank you.
Thank you, Archbishop. And that goes back to what I was saying before, that however it is included, it should not be included to alter what we have done. It should be asterisked as part of someone's opinion that was made. The other thing is that maybe myself and the director who has conspiracy theory propensity reading the same bad novels, but I'm struck by the letters that are the public comments. How like a chorus, speaking to talking points they are, and you know, and it seems like it's the effort of some organized effort to get certain points enumerated. And the interesting thing is that they enumerate the same points in the same order. And so interesting that so many people would be thinking about this and have almost the exact same words, the same way that the politicians who hand the news media talking points see policy recommendations then get put out in the news media. So then I would be really concerned about all of the public comments, frankly, in terms of altering what we have done. I think we have to consider them in terms of the spirit in which they are made and consider the possible sources. And then whatever group is going to be meeting is going to have to really sort these things out, because, we don't want any part of this process to be tainted by some undue influence by people who have more access to email than others.
Yes.
With all due respect to Reverend Buford, I hear him saying that we should discount Noble's recommendations, we should discount the public recommendations because they appear to be in sync. You know, some are from police, some are from citizens.
I'm not saying they should be discounted at all. But what I am saying is that in terms of altering what we've done, I don't think that they should alter it. I think they should inform it. And, when I was first questioned Mr. Sekon, which he clarified about the inclusion of the Noble document, I heard us say that we liked, or some people liked, the timeliness aspect. He went on to enumerate other things that may or may not be problematic, that went far beyond the scope of timeliness to deal with the very spirit of what we've been doing. And I don't think that the public comment period was to just completely scrap everything that we've done.
No, I don't think anyone took it as that either. It's to inform it, to influence it, to alter it, to help shape it. You know, it shouldn't be discounted. I'd like to make a couple of comments on the Noble recommendations.
Sure.
I think the timeliness thing, you know, about rushing or not rushing, that's neither here nor there. But I think number two and number three are really important things to look at. Honestly, I don't think from anybody that I've spoken with, and there is a consensus on this, that that having the police appoint somebody to the board is in any way legitimate. And it's not because police are inherently evil, it's just there's a giant conflict of interest there. You know, just as they pointed out that that being elected means that you're a political creature. It doesn't mean you're evil, it just means you get elected, you have those sorts of concerns. You know, if you're a police officer, you have concerns. You know, for instance, there's this giant conflicts of interest here. Like, what if the person appointed is a police officer who's under investigation?
Wait, wait, I think you got it misunderstood. The police department would be putting a civilian on the committee.
Okay, well, even so, okay, fine. If it's a civilian, then forgive me, I misunderstood that. I thought it could be anybody they wanted. But there's still conflicts of interest there. No other, as far as I know, no other civilian review board has members appointed by the police. That's an inherent conflict of interest. It also it interferes with the board's work because, in a sense, you've sort of got a spy or an informer, you know, on the board who's, you know, going to be relaying things back and forth to the police rather than following the proper chain of command, which is, you know, laid out in your flow chart. I just think that's just hugely problematic. I'm not even sure where that came from. I missed a couple of meetings when you switched them to Wednesdays. I think number three is really important as well. I don't know if an unelected, you know, NACOL or the California Human Relations Commission should be appointing members, but there is an issue that Carol Ward Allen alluded to, and that's you have the suburban directors and the more urban directors, and they're going to see things differently and appoint different types of people, whereas all the murders and the greatest atrocities that have all happened in the East Bay. All three murders have happened in the East Bay. The East Bay needs to be a special consideration regarding the appointments. And if you read through some of the comments too, I mean, there's a couple from police officers where they're like, why don't you come for an adventure through East and West Oakland with us? I mean, you know, right there, it just sort of shows the nasty attitude. And that's what burst forth in these sorts of violent racial profiling incidents. So I don't know if NACOL is the solution because they're not elected, but I really feel like that aspect, who is appointed by whom with what considerations, is really important. You're not going to have a lot of police complaints in the suburban areas where people are worried about getting mugged in a parking lot or something like that. I think I heard Joe Keller bring that up, or somebody did at some point. So in some way, the appointment needs to reflect where the problems are.
Well, those are very astute comments. Bratton's success in Los Angeles was just that. He put the police where the problems were, and police who are sensitive to the community from which the problems emanate. However, when we were trying to build consensus, because I've been here for the last 8 months at every meeting, and as you well know, when you're trying to establish some legislation or some kind of document, and you want a consensus, you have to make compromise. And while this is not a perfect document, as it stands right now, most of us can buy into 75 to 80% of it. But everyone at this table has something about it that they think, if you just ask me, I'll take it out and it'll be much better. But that may not feel good with another person. So in order to get something that can sell, this is what we've come up with. Now, I guarantee you that this, and I'm not a prophet, but I'm going to guarantee you that this document is going to be evolutionary. It's going to evolve. Some of the things we put in here are going to be redundant, unnecessary. It's going to fall away. Some of the things that we haven't even spoke of are going to come up. Someone's going to say, we need to put it in. And it's going to work. But this is a beginning, if not the final step, It's not perfect, but it's a very, very good first step. Now, having law enforcement on something like this, I'll tell you what happens. They're much more harder on each other than they are when it comes to disciplinary action. Much, much harder. Much, much harder. And but the citizens, it's hard for them to understand that. That's fine. But to make the compromise, I think the way it stands now is the best thing we can do. At this last minute criticism, I'm wondering, is it a strategy to just run this ship into the ground? And I don't know that, but I'm concerned about it. I think we ought to go for it. We ought to continue to take comments. We ought to, like in the shipbuilders, they have a shakedown cruise. Let's get it out there on the water. Let's see what happens. It is not precisely what Nicole has in those three categories that was discussed earlier. It is a hybrid, but Bart is unique. Unique in that it is in so many different counties, so many different jurisdictions. The last thing I have to say in this prediction, you're not going to get a lot of complaints. Police managers ought to be allaying the troops. You only average 12 complaints a year. Even at that, two or three of those complaints are something to be concerned about, really concerned about. So, the standard ought to be where we want to have positive, effective policing. If somebody falls below that, we give you a representation, and that's it. But we're not going to bring our standard down to make that behavior right. So we ought to take a step back, all of us, every group ought to take a step back and allow it to be born.
Can I just say one or two things on that? I don't want to dominate all the time, but one, I'm not trying to tank this. I'm trying to offer constructive feedback.
I accept that.
Two, I've been to a ton of meetings.
Yes,
I've missed two. I've missed two meetings, yeah. And a lot apparently happened during then. And maybe to your point about the evolving nature of it, more constructive feedback would be maybe there should be a clause in there that in 6 months or a year, the process needs to be revised. Because you do need to get state law sometimes changed those updates.
We also thought that if the auditor made a public report quarterly about the process, that would appease the community or set the community's hair on fire and say, you're not doing something right. Mm-hmm. And then you can chart that, and then we can correct what needs to be corrected or not.
And evaluations on newer models and living models like this, that is the new paradigm, is to evaluate far more often than in the past. Mm-hmm. The old style was, every 3 to 5 years. Well, that doesn't work. Because the irony is if it's 5 years, an elected official thing, they're reelected every 4 years. So they're missing the boat right there. So the goal is to try to evaluate more often. And my thought would be 6 months to a year in the beginning, just till we get, better acclimated on what we're doing.
Thank you. Can I throw out a few issues from the comments we received today and comments we received in the mail and then from the public meeting that I'd like to just check in with folks about? One actually was the appointment by the two associations. And Jesse, I think you'd raised the issue of, the waiting, BPOA has more members than BPMA. Just wanted to clarify where we'd left it in this model, which is just, we're going to ask the two associations to jointly appoint somebody. So, yeah, if you want to, work it out however you work it out, that's great. I'm sure that you'll figure out a way to do it that feels fair, whether it's one association, one vote, or you want to wait it, for a subcommittee. So we've left that to you to figure out. So I didn't want to, you made that comment, and I didn't want to leave it hanging there. So we're going to put that back to you guys to work out, and that is in this model for Director Sweet's recommendation. I told you so.
But I'm going to explain.
Move on.
Moving on.
The grenade.
I proposed a 9-member board. Training and orientation of appointees. This has come up before a few times, which is people are going to be appointed to the civilian review board, and what do they need? What's the essential knowledge that they need? And, as I've been thinking about this, the question is, well, who's going to do that, right? Do we want the auditor to recommend kind of a training orientation program? Is that something the board will adopt in terms of qualifications and what's going to be required, et cetera? It's something I don't think we have much clarity on in this model, but something that's come up at the public meetings, something people are concerned about, that the folks who are appointed to this board, have whatever essential knowledge they need to be able to do that job.
Tom, he might want to ask you.
Okay.
Is it a proper suggestion that they attend, like, a citizen police academy? If so, I think the city of Oakland has a very successful one.
Very successful. Yeah. It's called the Vision. It's an 8-week program. And they just go over the basics.
Yeah.
Sacramento has the most excellent one that also was trained there at the Citizen. I really want to make a point that she brought that up. Cultural sensitivity in the urban and suburban area is very, very important for the BART police department. Cultural sensitivity is a key. We did it in Sacramento, we've done it in Oakland. So if you're talking about training just for Citizen Review Board, we also would like to put that into...
We've recommended it already.
Yeah, for the BART Police Department, to have cultural sensitivity.
You'll be pleased to know, right, that we've already started diversity training. There was additional agreed to since the first of the year, and actually, to their credit, both associations have said we want more training on more subjects, and I think hopefully that's coming. Yeah. Okay. So I think there's a mandated, 24 hours every 2 years, and we're going to go to 40. Yeah.
Post is 24 hours every 2 years.
Yeah.
The training plan that the department has proposed for the coming year is 40 hours a year.
Right.
So we've substantially exceeding the post standard, and that includes issues such as diversity.
Some of those same things, maybe this review board members ought to have those as well in terms of a diversity training and the Oakland Academy. It seems like an interesting model, and 8-week commitment's a lot for a set of volunteers. So we need to balance, all right, it's a volunteer board, not compensated. How much of their time can we ask them to do versus that notion of we want them to arrive on day one thoroughly vetted? So I guess, I don't know, unless people have strong feelings about it, that we're going to resolve it today. But I just think... it's got to be really important for us to figure out, how do we train these appointments to the civilian board?
We do have Greg, you had your hand up.
Go ahead.
Before me.
I'll be asking. Well, I don't know if you're appointed. There was one good suggestion, though, in these suggestions for urban briefing.
Just one.
Second to last page. Just kidding. It's a joke. Second to last page. Speaking of training, we've had several members, all the supervisors in the police department always go to the post.
Mm-hmm.
Police officer standard training is approved internal affairs class.
Yeah.
They do allow citizens there. Matter of fact, not only that, they have had several in the past and still currently have citizen board members attend the internal affairs class. I just confirmed that last week. They don't encourage it, but they highly recommend it. It's a an organizational decision. And on that,
what page is that?
Second to last. But in rethinking this, it's a great opportunity. If you're going to provide good training, all these supervisors in every police department go to this course, including ours, when they're promoted. Eventually, hopefully not too soon, but we're getting everyone to the internal affairs class. And a couple of follow-ups on that. The post committee, they recognize that, everybody's training needs in different areas are different. I believe, I'm going to go out on a limb here, but it's worth asking. But an instructor in a class last week shared with one of my members that they always entertain even taking on a road show So if we had 12 or 13, as I'm seeing here already, involvement besides just the auditor themselves, they would do a class here at BART just to train the auditor and the civilian board members in a class. Because the class is already just usually 15 people in it anyway.
This is internal affairs.
Yes, 3 days.
How internal affairs works, how an investigation goes, state law, all that.
If you can imagine anything, it's 3 days, so it's 24 hours.
All right.
If you look at the day, it's probably taking breaks. It's, a 6.5-hour class. 3 days. We think it's a viable thing to can't give enough training, and they would be going to the same training that every supervisor throughout the state attends. So I think it's a good example of training to look at.
So my third one is. You want to comment on this?
Yeah. The training of the board.
Yeah.
My members would like to see at least the auditor or somebody on the board come to the training classes that we go to, like within the department.
Do you ever want us to come to?
Yeah, I'd like to. Please. Might be girl flash.
Probably not.
And we do know.
Carol could. I could.
We do know that on page 13, under chapter 207, we do know that the Office of the Independent Police Auditor has a responsibility to provide staff support and facilitate training for the citizen board, but we don't define what that is.
Yeah. We've asked the auditor to actually review comment on training as well, so it'd be great if they attended just to understand better what training they wear. So these are all great suggestions. So the last one is actually supermajority voting, and it's something, it's an idea that came from Director Keller, sort of had a model where we'd said the appeals process would be by simple majority, either of the BART board or of the Citizen Review Board, and it still rankles me, to watch the train wreck that is California government right now being ruined by supermajority voting. And it's almost as though we've said, well, we want the BART board, we want the Civilian Review Board to be empowered, but we don't quite trust them. It's like we pulled back. And so just the fact that, I don't understand the why of the supermajority voting, it feels undemocratic to me, and it feels like we're trying to hobble the Civilian Review Board and the BART board in some ways. And I think we received a number of comments along those lines, too, sort of, why don't you trust your civilian commission? So, yes?
I'd like to say, with regard to the supermajority voting, we're not talking a lot of votes. We're talking one additional vote. And if it becomes kind of the deal breaker, I'm willing to work it either way. And I just want to make sure that that's on the table, that I can go supermajority, I can go straight majority, however it's done to make this move. Because in each case, both with the BART board and with our proposed Civilian Review Board, we're only talking about one additional vote. So it's not a deal breaker for me if you...
I agree with her, and sometimes I think you have to look through political lenses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you want to get it across this board, all right, I think you should go leave it as that so it can pass, and then later on let the citizens review change it. But if you want something to pass sometime, you got to look at it realistically, and I think you'll get more people that will go one way than the other. So think about that.
And if you want to propose it both ways, because I haven't pulled our board on this model at all. Aside from just regular comments, but that one piece of it, the supermajority versus just majority, I think if it's something that you feel that strongly about, you might be able to convince enough of us to go. Because, like I said, it's not a deal breaker for me. If it becomes one where that's what it would take for you to go along with this,
I looked at the poll. It will go faster the other way. And then after you get it in there, as a citizens group can convince, or maybe as they show that it works the opposite, you may get the opposite. Sometimes I mean, it's just like this whole process that we're going through. There are many things on it that, through my lens, would be done differently. But we have to go through this process, and then in time, I think you can get it changed when people say, oh, look at this, this isn't working. We've had to compromise. And I think sometimes to get your vote, you may have to compromise, too, to get the thing through. And then after that, you may be able to, you'll have more time to convince people otherwise.
I appreciate the civics lesson, but, you know.
I appreciate you calling it a civics lesson. It was just my personal comment.
What I'm trying to do, though, is, I have never understood the why of the supermajority voting, and I understand there's a lot of compromises in here, but I think with every issue we've been able to discuss in a substantive way how this either strengthens the model or hurts the model.
And my comment to the
I really wanted to get to the substance of it. I understand that. But I'm asking for the folks who really, is there anybody who really feels strongly that the supermajority voting ought to happen? And can they explain the why of it? What's it there for? Yeah.
I just have a question as a citizen that is back in power to vote directly when this comes before the board. Mm-hmm. And that is what is the power of the board to amend what we deliver? So if this committee delivers a draft, just practically, does the board take out a pen and eraser and change what it wants and then votes? How does that process work so that
the board can. I would say, it's ultimately the board, all matters of policy are made by the board, and five members of the board can change anything that's in here. My guess is if there's a strong recommendation coming out of this committee for something, it's likely to pass at the board. Just because they're, my guess is they're going to want to honor the work that went on here to the extent that they can.
And I think one of the, if I could just add on to that, I think one of the reasons that the committee, the committee's recommendation, but that the July 30th public forum was held as a meeting of the entire board of directors and not just of this committee alone, was so that the full board had the benefit of hearing the public comment at that meeting, of reviewing the draft model as it stood at that point, and was part of this process of bringing it forward. So I'm concurring with Director Radulovich's sense of where the board is going. The full board charged this committee of the BART board with doing this work, and I think will be, as is typically the case, looking for the results of that work on behalf of the full board.
Just my thoughts would be is you deliver the strongest product because it is going to be subjected to the political process. What we are calling negotiation may be negotiated by the full board later. And I would be of the mind that we deliver it in a way that's most reasonable to us, knowing that it may be whittled down later. So if we say supermajority now, as an example, and I don't think I was present for all of the dialogue on that, but I think it was Mr. Keller who said, he said in one of the meetings, my constituency does not want police oversight. And I'm not clear what is where his constituency lies. As a community, I thought I heard him say that in one of the meetings, something of that effect. And I'm just saying that to say that perhaps we should be prepared to say simple majority and expect that if there's a constituency somewhere that wants to debate, they will. Just as we've seen in these letters, there is a constituency somewhere. And I think these are generally formed letters. Just in the reading of them, many of whom honestly said, I'm a BART police officer and this is how I feel. And others may have said, well, I'm married to a BART police officer and this is how I feel about these issues. So there is a constituency that will debate whatever we put forth. But I think we're better served to put forth your stronger proposal, knowing that when a number of board members sit together, it may be debate, since it's going to be debate anyway. I would say put together or put forth the strongest proposition. And if it survives the debate, good. And if there's areas that negotiated, that's what you do for a living, or that's what you do as an elected official, then let's see what our politics are.
My constituency, someone who commented, someone who didn't, don't necessarily agree with going up to the BART board, but if it's going to go up to the BART board, it has to be two-thirds. It has to be two-thirds for us to even.
Why is that?
I'm just letting you know what my constituency feels.
No, I
don't necessarily can explain it. I think they feel.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm trying to understand the why of it. You know, I mean.
Okay, if two-thirds feel a certain way, I think they can think, okay, they're going to accept.
Yeah. Yes.
Just one comment, Dr. Lewis again. The trepidation, again, that word keeps coming up in my mindset. The BART board did launch this particular procedure for the feelings that were heated in the city, correct? Am I under the impression that this was spawned because of the incident?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So since this was spawned because of the incident, are you saying that some people on the board disagree with what we brought, and do they have another set that they can implement?
Well,
so let me try this.
Okay.
So you're saying if we get to the BART board for the whole consensus of the board, and we have due diligently worked this out for 8 or 9 months, there are some people on the BART board that might reject this whole capsule? Because if there is, then they are in proxy because they launched the survey to get a citizen review committee. So when you're saying, do you want a majority or a supermajority, what does that really mean to the citizenry? Are we ready to be prepared for a rejection? Because they told us we could do this.
Yeah.
We're bringing it to them, so we would expect consensus from all board, all the people on the board. So I'm trying to see what difference does it make when you have a majority, a supermajority, a minority?
Yeah.
I'm trying to see, why did they let us launch all this? And you have trepidation that it might not pass. Do you have a model that will pass?
Let me take a step back and talk about supermajority. First, the supermajority voting is actually it's not. The BART Board of Directors won't need a supermajority to adopt this this model we're talking about here. It's actually a component of the review process. So, on disciplinary appeals, a supermajority of the Citizen Commission is required to push the appeal forward to the BART Board, and then a supermajority of the BART Board in a disciplinary matter is required to overturn or to alter the recommendation, I think, of the general manager. So this is in the appeals process, supermajority. I'm sorry, we're using shorthand here because we've been talking about these issues a lot. In terms of where this goes at the BART board, as we mentioned, the first time that the whole BART board had an airing of this, it was they saw the model presented at the public meeting that you were at, and all nine of us were there, and Dorothy said it right. They were all there just so they could, first of all, see the presentation of the model, and then they could hear the public's comments on the model at that meeting. So that was the purpose. Will the BART board reject this model? I think it's unlikely. You know, we can't, as members of the board, talk to all of our colleagues. That would be a violation of the Brown Act. Actually, any of you can, so you're welcome to lobby them, but we can't. I would say if there's a proxy, if there was a test or an indicator, we did a few weeks ago ask for two changes to the BART Act. And the two changes are changes necessary to enact this model. One was the grant the BART board the authority to appoint an independent auditor. The other was to allow the BART board to have a role in police discipline. Both of those changes were passed unanimously. So if I'm reading that right, I would say we've got nine directors who are, you know, in the ballpark. They are for something very much like this, if not exactly this. And so I wouldn't expect, you know, there might be some changes, some amendments proposed. I don't expect there's going to be a rejection based on the vote that we had a few weeks ago, unless something really different
happens. So your point on the majority is only after the Citizens Review Committee is established and only after there is a discrepancy in discipline of the police officers.
Correct.
And this is only after everything has been said.
Yes, this is...
Okay. I was under the impression that you were thinking majority, supermajority, to get this passed.
No. This,
all right, just want to be clear.
The BART board is able to make policy by simple majority.
Excellent.
Yeah, and we're able to adopt the budgets and hire and fire employees and do all of these things by simple majority. Supermajority worked its way into this draft in two instances. Most decisions of the Civilian Review Board and of the BART board relative to this will be simple majority. But just in discipline cases on the appeals, is there a supermajority provision?
And that's so what you're debating right now.
Yeah, that was the issue that I brought up.
Okay.
Just in relation to discipline.
And Tom, I certainly do not want to hazard speaking for Director Keller, who made this recommendation. What I thought I heard him say, so it's just my, what I thought I heard him say at the time was, as we had discussed where discipline appeals go in the organization, there was certainly strong comment from some of the board members and from some of the public that should ultimately rest with the board. And I think Joel had expressed some discomfort with that based on his experience, and the compromise that he proposed was a two-thirds vote, so that if it's going to take that step, that there's a little extra seriousness around it. My words, not his. But just for the bit of, you've asked the question, why, what's the substance behind it, I can't speak for the director, but for the benefit of the public who's here, that was what I heard of his explanation at the time.
I'm sorry, I'm not jumping ahead. I was just going to say that just from my perspective, and I think I expressed this before, I don't see substantially what the difference is going to make. You're aware of political things that I'm not aware of, but I don't see substantially what the difference is going to make one voting configuration over another. That being said, I really... I understand that, as Minister Keith has said, that everything that we have done is subject to further editing, further scrutiny, and other types of things. And if in the push and pull of you all's deliberations, it comes out differently, then that's okay with me. The thing that is not okay with me would be that that point on the voting configuration could become a stalemating type of a problem, a stalemating issue that would make the whole thing be null and void. So I would just hope that whatever is the sense of the debate on the voting configuration, that the spirit of that debate not be such that the end of it be a stalemated position where people have drawn their line in the sand on some kind of a voting principle, when the main principle is we need a citizens oversight review process in a city that is lacking that, or in a police structure that is lacking. So then the one does not outweigh the other in terms of keeping it from being.
And the reason I brought it up here was because I wanted to have the discussion here so that when we have the debate at the board, it's informed by what folks here think. So, I mean, we can kick it up to the BART board, but I think the more issues we can vet and resolve here, and as I said, I think the BART board is going to respect the work and the thoughts of the people on this committee, hopefully the members of the public who participated as well. But it's just an issue that came up in the public comments, and I wanted to just vet it again, make sure to see where we were. Yeah.
Just point of clarity from my thinking, a simple majority is six people.
Yes.
And supermajority is seven. Is that different?
On the 11, on the 11
yeah,
person citizen board.
I honestly think
the committee of 11 actually.
The way it's established.
Well, because the board.
Five
and six for the BART board. So five is a simple majority, six is a supermajority.
Yeah.
On an 11 person committee, a 2/3 majority, the difference is, well, it's eight.
The BART board, though, is six votes.
because this is the Board of Supervisors does 2/3 on certain things, and that's 8 of 11. Yeah. So it's different, because if you add that extra 2, it's a third is different. Yeah.
I honestly think you got that the vast majority of the complaints investigated by the auditor and the appropriate discipline, if discipline is necessary, is best gotten right by that auditor when the auditor comes up with the board. Mm-hmm. And the way it's set up now, they have to dialogue. They have to work together, because we're going to be reporting out regularly about your failures and your successes, etc. So what's going to happen is the vast majority of the situations are never going to get to the 2/3. Just never going to happen. But we have it set up there, and that's good. But it's never going to get that high. They're going to get it right where they have an understanding is the best thing to do, and submit it to the chief. Chief's going to be, well, I don't want to be fronted off as the one that's holding up the decision. It forces consensus. And like I said, the majority of the cases are minor stuff. But when I was reading these comments, this is misplaced fear.
Mm-hmm.
Misplaced fear. You know, BART officers, vast majority of them, do their job every day, go home, never confronted with this. Never. And it's easy to do police work and get maybe 1 or 2 complaints in 25 years. Easy. It's not hard. It's easy. And be effective in your policing and arrest people. You know, and arrest the right people. I mean, if you ask the people where it exists in San Diego, Los Angeles, San Jose, San Francisco, Sacramento, Oakland is kind of questionable, Berkeley, they all tell you the same thing. But going into it, it's like, it's just change. People will adjust, and they will govern themselves accordingly.
Okay. So I'm not hearing consensus to change this. I mean, I'm hearing, I think, 2 opinions in favor of a simple majority. I'm hearing a lot of people saying whatever.
Involved in this,
and 2 in favor of super majority. Yeah, so let's,
we ought to move it on.
Let's leave it. So what I want to do, yeah, sure, yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just wanted to get off of that particular comment and move to another thing.
Yeah.
Berkeley right now is in the process of doing a revision of its regulations. And I'm looking at 3.01, and it just talks about the first year revising the regulations. And I think it's important, and because I'm saying this is because we're having a problem of historical knowledge and the evolution of regulations of our process. I think it's important to review at least every 2 years, because you lose that historical knowledge on the board or within the system. So I think something specific should be put in there in terms of revision, maybe every 2 years, so you will have a constituency that has the knowledge, or always have a constituency who is sitting on the board or within the offices of the auditor, who knows the reasons and the evolutions and the etymologies of what these regulations are. And I have to go to my real job now. So
I appreciate that. Just to follow up, it's an excellent point, and I think we talked about 2-year terms, and we talked about staggering them so that of the 11, and I'm not, you know, it'll be 6 and 5. But when we initially appoint, some will be for 1-year terms and the others will be for 2. So the idea is you never have a board that's all new, that you'll have at least, you know, half your members about will be continuing, and then at maximum of, you know, half new. The other idea is that people can be reappointed after 2 years. So we do want that people are doing a great job and they're still into it. We want to keep that institutional memory to the best we can. So those are the ways that we try to deal with that. You know, continuity and institutional memory, the staggered terms and the reappointment. We didn't want to have really long terms because, you know, again, you're asking citizens to make a commitment. 2 years seems reasonable. 4 years, you know, we do that, but 4 years seemed like a lot. But that's how we handled it in the model.
I think we need to have something in here where you can have recorded minutes or something, so that that is part of your succession training.
Yes, there's a record. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. And it's a good point. I don't think we made notes.
We didn't put any. We didn't have it down.
So
we need to include that so that we have a historical.
Are folks okay with the idea that maybe it's the auditor's responsibility if it's not clear in here that they're supposed to do records, of course, of every public discussion, right? Certain information's privileged, but there'll be a public record of minutes and so on, and so the auditor, in their role staffing the committee, will keep those minutes. Is consensus around that? Yeah. We're almost done. Okay.
But you know what my fear is on that?
What's that?
Until we know who our auditor is, you know, sometimes, you know, obviously we hope we get an auditor that can do multitask. But my only fear is that sometimes you may get a really great auditor in one area, and then that may not be your forte.
Right.
So shouldn't we wait until we really see who that is and then consider...
Sure, the auditor will have a professional staff, so I think when we say the auditor, we're not talking necessarily about one person, but we're talking about that office. We're going to have to find some money, too, and we know that's
fine. I have a comment on the Citizens Review Board. Since the Citizens Review Board will be part of the Citizens Review, can't they establish their own president, vice president, secretary, treasurer, and their own code of bylaws as who gets what vote, who goes in, who goes. Why is it that we have to do all this for them since we don't even know who they are? Let them set their rubber rules of order so that we can, the citizenry of Oakland can make that decision instead of inserting that into that document. We're trying to make a more perfect union here. So we want the Citizen Review Board to be active and to be alive and to be powerful. Let them make that who does what vote and set up Robert Rules of Order. Can that happen?
Yeah, we will, absolutely. The goal here is just, we've said, here's how the Citizen Review Board will be appointed and by whom. Once they're appointed, they'll run their own meetings, they'll determine their own agenda, they'll elect their own officers, they'll conduct their own business, and they'll have all the autonomy we can allow them in terms of determining how that goes. So they will be empowered in that way.
This will be one of them, not to set arbitrary vote.
Yeah. And, you know, we might actually, if clarification's needed, say they'll elect the president and other officers as needed. So...
Director
Sweet wants to go. I just wanted to summarize.
No.
Did you want to talk or you want to go?
But if I heard her question correctly, I don't know if you answered it correctly.
Okay.
She was talking about the 2/3 and
determining their own rules.
Uh huh.
Okay.
And what we're doing today actually takes that away, meaning they don't get to come back and say anything about 2/3, and I didn't want her to walk away with a misinterpretation of what you just said.
That's true. Yes. We've said on the discipline matter, yes, it requires a supermajority. Nothing prevents the Citizen Review Board, however, from making recommendations to the BART board about ways they'd like to see the model changed. So once they're seated, if they say, hey, this is, you know, we'd like you to... In the areas where we have been prescriptive of what they're able to do, they're still able to make recommendations to us of, like, we'll change this. So, but you're right. That's a great clarification. But before everyone drifts away, I just wanted to see where we were. I have 4 changes that I think we really achieved consensus on. I just want to quickly run through them so we understand what's going to get added to this model before it's heard at the BART board. One, actually, Jesse brought up that wasn't in the revised draft, but we'd agreed to it, was the board members cannot serve on another police review committee.
At the same time, concurrently,
right. That was in addition to section 2.03 on page 9. Another, which was in there, was that no person who's currently a sworn police officer should be a member of the review board. The third was the clarification. It's 1.04F, I think, on page 5. The clarification about the responsibilities for the auditor in terms of their on-duty officer-involved shooting incidents, that they're empowered to go there, observe the interviews, and so on. The last was that it'll be the responsibility of the auditor to keep a record of the meetings of the review board and So anything else that I missed in terms of
changes? There was a gentleman that came up at the at the meeting, and he was, I think he was an attorney, and he was doing some edits.
Yeah.
And he was speaking verbally.
Mr. Fields.
Yeah.
Mr. Fields,
yeah.
Did we get, he was talking, did we get those?
We got his written comments. I believe Marsh has incorporated them.
His comments are in here.
Oh, great.
Started on page 2.
And he'd caught a few typos and things, which you've incorporated into the draft. So, he did provide us with written comments, and they've been incorporated. The only other clarification he brought up was the on-duty, and I think we vetted that. We understand that even if you're not, you know, it's not during your shift, but you, as an officer, shift into officer mode, that we understand that to be on duty.
Correct.
So he did bring that up, but I think we had a good discussion of that here, and we understand that even if you're not on shift, but you're acting as a police officer, those activities are still on the purview of this committee. So, yeah, go ahead.
I have a clarifying question.
Yeah.
I'm referring to the document draft bar citizen oversight model, page 2. It's chapter 1-04, duties and responsibilities, A1. And I thought I understood this, and now I'm not sure that I do understand, but I would like to clarify it. There it states in under A1, the second sentence, it says, the police auditor shall investigate all complaints of allegations of police officer misconduct regarding unnecessary or excessive use of force, racial profiling, sexual orientation bias, sexual harassment, and the use of deadly force, suspicious and wrongful deaths. I was under the impression that was a restriction to just those areas for the auditor to be investigating. Is that correct or not?
I think the answer to that is the primary, those are the duties for which the independent auditor has primary and sole responsibility. There is an additional authority for the independent auditor, which is under C of that same section on page 4. The Office of Independent Police Auditor shall review internal affairs investigations conducted by the BART Police Department to determine if they are fair. Objective, complete, thorough, objective, and fair. Shall have the authority to monitor and require follow-up into any complaint or allegation. And then going on that page down to E, there is an appeal process where a complainant may file with the auditor an appeal of the findings of an investigation conducted by the BART Police Department regarding an on-duty incident. And the auditor, on receiving that appeal, can review the completed investigation, determine whether or not further investigation is warranted, can either, and ensure that that is done either through the independent auditor's office or through any, by the BART Police Department or any other competent investigative agency.
Should all that be put on one page, like under the auditor's duties?
It is all under the auditor's, and that's the chapter that's the duties and responsibilities. And
so, to answer your question, so the auditor will conduct the investigations for all the misconduct in 1A, but they can also review other investigations at the Internal Affairs Department at their discretion.
Okay.
So IA will conduct those investigations, but the auditor may review.
Okay. Yep. Taking that in mind, just what you said, if you turn to page 10, chapter 2-06, duties and responsibilities, A, citizen complaints. A victim of on-duty police misconduct, a victim's parent or guardian, or a witness to misconduct may file at any public meeting of the citizen board a written complaint or allegation of wrongdoing against a BART police officer. Upon receipt of such complaint or allegation, the citizen board will immediately turn the complaint or allegation over to the Office of the Independent Police Auditor for investigation. So what that says to me, there were some limitations in the first thing I read, and then Dorothy mentioned a couple of other instances where an auditor may step in. Back to see what she had read, it doesn't say the auditor can investigate anything. It says the auditor will have the authority to monitor or require follow-up. Okay, and then it talks about the appeal process, like Dorothy said. On page 10, what I just read, seemingly any complaint of any sort that comes from the victim, a victim, parent, or guardian, or witness, any of those complaints, it says here the auditor will be investigating all of those.
That was an auditor.
Okay, I didn't think it was,
yeah.
But this to me clearly states any complaint of any type can be investigated by the auditor. And if that is not the case, which I didn't think it could be,
if it comes through the,
I think it needs to be.
I think what he's trying to say is that if the complaint doesn't fit into their context, he forwards it to IA.
Well, I don't see.
I think he's on.
I understand that part, but I don't see any complaint of any type.
The intent
for writing this was just to give access to a complaint can be dropped off.
Yeah.
But the requirements of the complaint are what you read earlier, racial harassment, sexual bias, sexual harassment, abuse, use of force, etc. It's not any complaint. In other words, if you come to the meeting and you want to drop off a complaint, fine, we'll take it and give it to the Internal Affairs, the police department, if it doesn't fit the requirement that we laid out here earlier.
Okay, and I believe, Reggie, that was the intent,
so
as I've heard.
Does this fix it to say the citizen board will immediately turn the complaint or allocation over to the Office of Independent Police Auditor or the BART Police Department?
If it doesn't fit the requirement stated in section.
We need a clarifying sentence. So you drop off the complaint at the civilian board. It goes to the auditor. The auditor then vets it and says, this is in my purview. I'll investigate
it.
Or it's referred to Internal Affairs.
And I agree with
you. So we can add that sentence.
Because that's what I heard originally.
Okay.
And my only point being that paragraph there does not indicate that to me.
Yeah.
Because it does state a written complaint or allegation of wrongdoing, which could be anything.
Yeah, you got a
point. And then said the auditor will investigate it. So if that was clarified, I would appreciate it.
So that's a great clarification. We'll add another sentence to say the auditor will then vet the complaints and then either refer it.
The whole time
investigate. All right. Okay. So now I have five things that I think we have consensus on. If we're good to go, so I don't need. Did I get everything? Are we done?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you all again for participating. I thanked you many times for your participation in this, but it seems to be endless, so I get to thank you over and over again, and it's been great.